I was trying to upload my files here. Is it possible? Do you mind?
Or yeah, no? You can.
Do you want me to connect my laptop?
You can upload temporary to your to the desktop your presentation. You didn't upload it yet?
No. Here we go. That is CBM. I see. This is the point. Macintosh.
Exactly. Then you would be better off by connecting your own laptop.
I have here the files in PDF. What is it? Full screen?
The symbol.
This one?
Yes.
Okay, it's okay. Right?
Okay, that will do for you?
All right, folks, I think it's 4 o'clock.
Well.
Welcome to the test traffic working group. And if PowerPoint agrees with me, then we actually have an agenda. Okay, cool. I just discovered that the agenda isn't on PowerPoint, but that's a minor inconvenience. Let's see, how do we fix that? Can you, what?
If you have a laptop, you can...
Well, just switch laptops, right?
Laat me zitten. Ik kan dit wel,
ja?
Ik kan het zo wel. Right. Okay, folks. So, welcome to the test traffic working group. The agenda was mailed around. There has been one tiny change that's to be announced in item 4, is replaced by René Wilhelm. So, this is the proposed agenda. Any comments to the agenda? No? Next thing I have to do is send apologies for the regular chair, Alex Tudor, who couldn't make it to this meeting because he had some health problems. But he hopes to be there at the next meeting. Scribe for this meeting. Anybody? Yeah, René volunteered. Thank you, René. As final administrative point, we have to approve the discuss the minutes of the previous meeting. They have been posted to the list quite a long time ago. Are there any comments to the RIPE 52 minutes? No? Then we declare them final. Let's get started with the real business. First speaker of this afternoon is Luca Derry on the consumer broadband monitoring proposal, where, well, you'll explain it. Luca, floor is yours.
Hi, good afternoon. The consumer broadband monitoring project, I think, is something that you already heard of. And here is a presentation about an implementation I have done together with some students of the University of Pisa in Italy. So in order to have a proof of concept implementation to see whether the architecture is feasible and to understand what are the problems and the issues involved with it. The idea today is to somehow show you how the overall architecture has been implemented and to give you some pointers so that you can look yourself at what we have done. So a little bit of history. The purpose of the TTM is basically to measure some performance parameters of the internet, but not from the central point of view as many times it happens, but from the user point of view. The idea is to put the probe directly at the user's premises, so to see exactly what it has been delivered from the ISP point of view to the user. This means that the measurements are actually done on the customer premises at home and not on a central point. However, because the idea is to have something that can work in a real environment, we cannot pretend user to be equipped with something costly or to produce some software that has to be maintained for operating systems that are currently being changed. For instance, many people are using XP that is probably replaced soon by Vista and so on. So the idea is to put the probe on a different place, on a place that somehow doesn't have to be, I don't know, a problem for the user. And for this reason, we have decided to use some broadband routers similar to this, for instance, that you probably have at home, and to modify the router so that the probe can run directly inside the broadband router. Of course, you can also have a wireless connection, and so the idea is that the tests are performed here inside this device. You don't have to do anything on your PC. You can surf the internet, you can do whatever you want, but you know that at the same time, you can measure some parameters you like. And I will show you this. So therefore, the requirement is that device have to be cheap, worldwide available, and basically simple to install. And probably you already have the device at home. You simply have to modify some parameters that we'll show you later today. So basically, all the measurements are between the home device and the TTM node. The TTM node is the central point. Central doesn't mean that there is one point for everybody, but it's a place that can collect data from several probes. The initial idea was to measure something like packet loss, packet delay, and jitter, and of course bandwidth. Some of those tests can be periodic, like for instance packet loss, and some are on demand, like bandwidth, because they can require some bandwidth, and the user may be doing something else, like a VoIP call that can be interrupted by the test. So the idea is to have both at the same time. In the first phase, that basically lasted a couple of months this year, we developed a probe and a TTM that was running on a standard PC. So basically you get a PC with quite some memory, quite some disk space, and you do everything there. So the PC is the natural place for doing developments. But as I've said, these tiny devices have other requirements, like they don't have so much memory, so much RAM, and they don't have too much storage space. So therefore, this was a good starting point just to understand whether the architecture was good, but it was not the final point, because we had to refine the implementation in order to make sure that everything fits into a router. Because another problem is that users don't really know how to configure complex things, so we have to make everything very simple. And because those devices cannot have a very powerful NNO configuration system, we have decided to keep them simple, to do very little, and to put the intelligence in the center. So therefore, in the phase two, we have refined the implementation, and we have ported the stuff directly onto the router. So the idea is that the central point remains on a PC. The requirements is that at the moment it's running on Linux. The requirement is that we need an SQL database, MySQL in our case, in PHP, and that's all. The database is used for storing data, the configuration data, I mean, and the PHP language has been used for developing the web pages. So therefore, in phase two, we have refined the implementation of the probe and put everything into the router. What is the goal? The goal is not to create something that is able to measure, as I said, packet loss, jitter, bandwidth. This is not the goal. The goal is to create an architecture that allows you to measure whatever you like. So the idea is that you can plug your own probe that you have probably developed some years ago or that you are willing to develop, and you know that if you follow some guidelines, you can put this probe directly into a router or into, you know, the same architecture running on a normal PC. And the system itself will allow you to configure everything from a web interface and to fetch data periodically the way you like. You will also have some graphs for free, and of course you can add things like alarms, threshold, and so on. So this is the idea. The idea is the architecture. So we are not focusing on doing a special kind of measurement, okay? But we are focusing on architecture, on creating something that you can use for doing your own measurements. Therefore, the probes and measurements are not hard-coded. We are providing, of course, some probes that implement those measurements. But the idea is tonight is to focus directly on this. And as I said, all the measurements are performed on the user premises, whereas we collect data from a central location. Just to give you an idea, this is the architecture. There's one box that can run either a Tripe or wherever you like. If you have an ISP or a private organization, you can put one of those boxes somewhere. In our case, for instance, we use a VMware machine image. You know that this is enough, so we don't really need a lot of power. And we put the probes directly at the customer premises. Or if you have a large network, you can put it directly at the edge, so you can do the measurement from there. Those routers are measuring whatever we'll show you later from that place. And we report the information to the center. In general, it's the central box that periodically fetches data, fetches measurement results from those boxes. But in some cases, it's the router itself that is pushing data. This is because the router may be behind a NAT, so it is not easily reachable from remote. So this is basically the architecture. Talking about quantities, a single TTM box can control many routers. Each router is configured by one TTM box. I will show you later how this works. But it can provide data to several TTM boxes. So it's a kind of mesh. Everything is protected by password. Of course, you can use default communities, default or simple HTTP password, but there is no anonymous access. This is to be important. And also at the central point, we guarantee that not everybody can see everybody else's result. So namely, I can see my own result, but I cannot see the result of another probe that does not belong to me. As I said, the routers are configured on the TTM box using a web interface. And because these tiny boxes don't have much storage space, and also if we have, suppose that we have enough space, because some of them, for instance, can have a USB port where you can plug a USB pen or a hard disk, we don't want to store data there because it's not the appropriate place. We want to move those data to the center. So therefore, the only permanent configuration that inside the router is basically the URL of the central box, the name of the probe, and a password. So very simple information. All the rest is volatile, and it is saved on memory. Just to give you an idea, this box has about 50 megabytes of disk space for saving data. That is more than enough for storing our results. As I said, they can work in both in POP or in push mode. That is very important. And each router has a web interface for configuring all those three parameters that I have mentioned before. The data storage is at the center, on the TTM box. I explain you, first of all, because of the volatile memory, and also because it is easy to do comparison. For example, if I want to compare the bandwidth that as a user has perceived from his home location with the bandwidth provided by the same ISP from another user's location, it is very simple to do it at the center, but it's hard to do on the probe. And also on the probe, so on those boxes, we cannot pretend to install complex things like PHP, Perl, or whatever. So therefore, the idea is that those probes do their own measurements. They don't take much space, much memory. The router has to do its job, so being a router, or a wireless access point, or both at the same time. And that's all. So this is the concept. As I said, we use MySQL for storing configuration data, but all the results are stored on RRD files that I'm sure that everybody knows. The idea is to use RRDs because their file size is static, so we know in advance how much space we need. And also because, especially the newest version, has some interesting features like data aggregation, trend calculation, or other things like anomaly detection. So we can create somehow a very lightweight and simple implementation of anomaly detection using RRDs. I will show you how it works. If you're interested at looking at more detailed information about the implementation, you have to look at the RRD website and look for aberrant RRD behavior. So the focus here is on the architecture, not on the probes. As I've said, most of the probes we have developed are basically wrapped around existing probes. So for instance, for bandwidth and jitter, we use iPerf, or for round trip time or packet loss, we use ping and so on. Of course, we have developed something on our own, for instance, like we wanted to measure application performance, like the response time of HTTP or SMTP, so to see how fast a web server responds to us in terms of application response time. But this doesn't mean that we are focusing on the probe. We are focusing on the architecture. We have taken advantage of what was existing on the internet, and we used that. As I said, we are putting some wrapper around them because we want to make sure that the results are saved on the volatile memory in a way that we can use it. I will show how this works. We also have developed a custom SNMP MIB that allows us to fetch data from probes also using SNMP. So if you are familiar with MRTG, CACTI, or NAGES, or whatever, you can also use those tools for fetching data the same way we fetch data for the TTM central box. And we also have implemented a lightweight honeypot using the firewall roots of Linux, because those boxes are running the Linux operating system 2.4 kernel series. The web interface, I will show you a live demo later on. It looks like this. So you basically have, in this case, we're talking about tool. Tool is the probe itself, like a measured bandwidth. So we can specify the parameter. We specify how many parameter in input, how many parameter in output. We specify here the type. I don't know if you can read, but this is a gauge, for instance, the minimum and the maximum, and the default value, because those parameters are used by RRD. So the idea is that whenever you configure a new tool, you specify what do you expect in input, what do you expect, do we have to expect in output, and what is the range of your measurement, and that's all. This way, the TTM box creates on the fly the correct RRDs with the correct values automatically for you, so you don't have to play with anything very low level. And here you will see a registration of a test. So here we register a test, for instance, here we register a bandwidth test. We specify how often we want to run the test. In this case, it's every 5 minutes, if this test is enabled or disabled. And the input parameter here that we have discussed before, for instance, in this case, is the host name, and whether we want to show the test result or not. As I said, I will show you them. The configuration files are pretty simple. Basically, the router at boot fetches the configuration out of the TTM, basically calls a URL. This is an example of the configuration file that is returned. On top, you can see is general configuration. So the test name, ping_ntop, the tool name is called ping probe. So here under /bin, there will be a tool called ping probe. This test is enabled, so you can enable or disable test. Test time, 300 minutes, every 5 minutes, the test has to be performed. There are two parameters. The parameter one has value 3, the parameter two has value www.top.org. Because this is a ping, it means to send 3 ping packets and to ping the host and top. The results are 2. See, the first result is named round trip time RTT. It's a gauge, the unit is millisecond, and so for the second. This information is parsed by a daemon that is running on the probe, on the router, and basically runs the test periodically the way it is described here. The results are fetched by the TTM box through HTTP, and the results are coded in XML. So this is, for instance, the result for the previous test. So as you can see in the result, you will find the same information you have found on the configuration file. As I've said, it is possible to fetch exactly the same data through SNMP using this custom SNMP agent we have developed. So everything, as you see, is configurable, is dynamic. There is nothing hard-coded. In the SNMP agent, for instance, we have a table. We define the test name, the result, the time, etc. So this means that you can add your own test without having us to redefine the agent. The web interface looks like this. I will show you a demo later. On the left side here, you have the probes. On the right side, you have the graphs. If you are familiar with tools like Cacti, you can zoom the graphs. We have a calendar. I will show it works. As I said, we have an SNMP agent. The idea is to allow people to choose whether they want to use the XML version or the SNMP version. Probably you will end up using both of them, because the TTM box will definitely use the XML version, but if you have a tool that speaks SNMP, you probably want to use it for fetching data out of the router, so it can be integrated in your management system. The price of those routers are quite reasonable, I think. They are much less than 75 euros street price, so if you buy one unit, so if you buy more units, it will be much cheaper. Just to give you some information, most of them use the MIPS CPU, or others use x86-like CPUs. And the major vendor is Broadcom. So even if they look all different, basically the family is one. It's based on a Broadcom board. Some of them have switches, some don't have, some have an ADSL modem, some don't. But as I said, they look and they are basically all similar. We have replaced the original firmware with a Unix implementation called OpenWRT, it is freely available. And this one means that basically we use the original look and feel of the router, and we replace it with this implementation. You can still do routing, wireless, everything you know, VPN. It is a Linux box basically running on a small appliance. And we have packaged our stuff in a way so that you can install it very, very easily. For our test, we use two routers. The first one is this Linksys, that is basically the router that I use by phone. I don't know if you know the Spanish company named Phone that is sponsored by Google and so on. So if you can get one of those routers, this is one of those, you will be able to install our stuff, because it is also running Linux. Or we use another Asus WL500G for our test. Both of them look very different. I put the pictures here, but as I said, they are pretty similar, because the Linux operating system makes them look equal. This is the console of the router. So we added some menus. I will show how it works. And these are the pointers. So there is a wiki service with the documentation. You can use our CVS server for fetching data for source code for both the probe and the TTM box. And of course, there are binary packages. I want to show you a demo before you probably ask questions, so you can see how they work. So this is the central box. Here you will see, this is the entrance here. Of course, you have to put a username and a password here. With administrator, I can define some users. So everybody that wants to use the TTM box as a central location for fetching data must be registered. So the administrator registers the user. At that point, the user can log in and can register the probes. The probes means the physical routers. The menu next to it is the tool. Tool means a probe that is able to measure something. Okay, just to give you. To show you an example, this is the DNS probe I've shown you before. This one is it's a DNS problem, of course, the measure how long it takes the DNS for to resolve a name. It has two parameters, the host name, that is a string, it's required, so the web interface enforces this. And the result is a time expressed in milliseconds between zero and the top value. And it is a gauge. And this is important because it allows us to create RRDs on the fly, okay, without you having to tell us anything more. Here, as you can see, we can select the number of parameters. It can be zero for a passive probe. It's a wizard-based tool. The test means that for each probe here, we have ASUS, Linksys, and so on, we have defined some test. Let's look at this one. Okay, so every 300 seconds, we measure the bandwidth between the router and this host, that is the web server of NTOP. And the test name is called bandwidth underscore test. So at some point, we'll have an RRD under the ASUS probe ID that is named bandwidth underscore test dot RRD. Here, we register the probes. They can be either in push or mode or not. Basically, we know the last time that the probe has answered, because this is not in a push mode. So therefore, the central box periodically fetches data out of the router. And we know the owner, so we can show the router only to the owner of the probe, or of course to the administrator. And when we click on graph, we see on the left side the router, so we can open the test. We see all the registered tests, and here you can see the graph that you're probably familiar with. You can zoom. This is something that you already know. If we have a calendar, we can go back and forward. As you can see, we have used the latest RRD. So for instance, we have for free the trend, and it is possible to have the aberrant RRD behavior implemented. As I said, this is basically free with RRD. So these are all the available tests. We can click and we can basically see what happened. So the idea is that you register your probe and your router. I will now connect to a router. We have a tone, is the first one named ASUS. We have added a new menu called CBM. Here are the tests on demand or the configuration of the probe. I said that there is not much to configure. We only have to configure the URL of the central box that by default in our case is cbm.ntop.org, but you can deploy the CBM at your premises, the user, the probe ID, and the password, because the same user can have several probes. So the same user can do actually a comparison of graph. Here you can also compare. Do comparison of the graph, see, on one on another probe, so Tuxpat versus ASUS, and so on. Packet loss. Here you can play some test on demand. Test on demand means that now you can decide when to run a test. So if you want to measure the bandwidth, now you click. It takes some time because the router is, in this case, starting IPR, is measuring the bandwidth the way it has been configured. So in this case, with the host I showed you before, so it is measured the bandwidth between the router and this host, that is the end of the server, and this is the bandwidth. Okay. If I run the test again, you probably see a different result. The same for Jitter, for DNS, and so on. So this is basically the idea, is to create an architecture. As I said, most of those probes are basically wrappers around existing stuff. Yeah, it's a bit different. So it's live stuff. And I can also show you, I'm basically done. Then we yes, the connection is a little bit slow. And this is the same move. Come on. So there is a file system that is pretty small. Okay. Inside the var, you don't see it properly. So inside the var results, that is basically a file system mounted in RAM. See, there is the ROM and there is the RAM. It's not easy to read. I'm sorry. This is the available memory that depends on the system. So, as I said, not that. So here we have some directories. Inside each directory, we have the result. The last time we performed the result, and the result number one, the result number two. The central location fetches the result. Here we have the SNMP agent, this is one, running all the time, so therefore you can fetch data out of the router. Of course, you have the MIB2 plus our custom MIB. And here the probes, here see probe HTTP GET, are here just for a short period of time, because they do the measurement and then they basically disappear. And the idea is that the central box is fetching data. In push mode, at the end of each test session, we push the result. And and this is the configuration file I mentioned before. Whenever the configuration is changed on a central place through the web interface, the probe downloads the new configuration and performs the new test. So basically, you don't have to do anything on the probe. You simply turn it on as a normal router, the way you have it at home. You do the configuration on the center. Before a new test session, the router checks whether there is a new configuration file or if the configuration has changed, downloads the configuration file and does the job. If I turn off the router, I turn it on, everything will be lost, okay? But not the result, because the result have been stored on a central location. So it is something pretty simple, I think. Do you have any question?
Questions? Since this is a proposal, implementation of proposal making this working group, do people feel that this is going in the right direction? Okay.
Yes.
Good.
This is definitely something that I wish we would have had like 2 years ago. So yeah, this is definitely going in the right direction. I like this personally. Speaking on personal title, some pretty detailed questions. One is if in pull mode the central box sort of goes down for an hour, do your current probes store like an hour's worth of data, or do you only get the last result?
The last
you only get the last result. I think there's room for improvement.
Yes.
The second thing that just came up because I was thinking about DNS1 measurements is the measurement period. You just say, okay, do this every 5 minutes. What we do with the TTM measurements as well as the DNS1 measurements is actually not do it that with that strict a period, but with a stochastical variation into it. We use a Poisson distribution, so it's like, you know, it's on average it's every 5 minutes, but it might be a minute or six. Something like that. So there's another suggestion for improvement, so that you have a parameter that says don't do it every 300 seconds, but do it on average every 300 seconds,
yes,
based on the stochastic process.
So basically, we have to add it here in the test, something that can be.
Leave the interval there, but say, you know, add another parameter that says the interval is strict every 5 minutes, or it's with some consciously inserted jitter every 5 minutes.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess the first thing I want to say is the short answer Daniel gave too, which is yes. And when can I get my hands on this and start playing with it?
Okay, at the end of my files there is a few pointers. I forgot to show you how easy is to configure it. Suppose that you have one box like this, okay? And suppose that you install OpenWRT. That's openwrt.org website. It is very simple to correct.
I'm thinking of a different kind of box, which is probably easier to install stuff on because I won't need OpenWRT because it's running Linux.
Okay.
And it has lots of disk space. It's an old sad Hulk box which runs at 133 megahertz.
Okay.
But it's my domestic router.
Okay, so for OpenWRT we have a package, okay? I'll show you, it's pretty simple to install. You click on install software. See the package list, at some point there is CVN probe. You can really install the install is simply clicking. Now, click on install just to show you them. So we have to make a package for your system. Otherwise, you can fetch the source code and do make install. This is all I can offer.
I can type those letters.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. If we use a PC, we should probably try to find one distribution and to probably create a package for it. I show you that the package has been installed. So you see, it is ripe CVN probe. And now if you want to install it, so if you have a fresh OpenWRT, fresh install, that's all. Done. And then at some point you click on CVN deck configuration. Now, we have to do some kind of packaging. But if you don't mind about doing it yourself, so do the installation. Should
well, I actually prefer to do make install than RPM or whatever the other flavor is, because I know what's going on, or think I do.
Okay, I think this is a little bit out of scope.
Yeah.
Too much. Yeah. I definitely think that people should get Linksys or Linksys or whatever themselves. Actually, I got one as soon as I have some free time, which is rare, isn't it? I'll try it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, maybe it's out of scope, but just out of curiosity, because I don't know, how easy is it really to get OpenWRT to run? Do you have to sort of open the case and remove some EEPROMs, or do you just upload something? Sort of, can you give an rough impression on how easy or difficult it is?
Yeah.
And the success rate you have for that stuff these days.
So far the success rate is 100%, but you know, never know. If you have a Linksys router, it is pretty simple because you go upload the firmware, you click select the file name, install, reboot. Very simple. On the ASUS box, the situation was a little bit different because it changed from router to router. We had to use TFTP.
Mm-hmm.
So the instructions are, you go to the OpenWRT website, search for the router, click on the router name, and then we show you some
instructions. There's a recipe there.
Yeah, but router by router. So router there is no one single way of this.
Yeah.
So this was pretty simple. I use TFTP.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Luca.
Thanks.
So next up is Franz Schwarzinger. Franz is a student from Austria who is doing an internship at the RIPNCC. And he'll be talking about the multicast proposal as soon as I can find it. Okay, cool.
Okay, good afternoon again. As Hank already said, my name is Franz Schwarzinger, and I'm at the moment working on the multicast monitoring proposal written by Gerd Döring. I don't know if he's here right now, but yeah. The exact name of the proposal is Multicast Monitoring on RIPE NCC Test Traffic Boxes, and I don't know if all of you know what's in the proposal, so I will give you a quick overview of what's in there. The proposal suggests that there should be multicast beacons which send out packages, TTM packages, to predefined multicast addresses. There should be listeners which listen to these packages, log the data, and print out some graphs. Raw data should be made available for interested parties. There's already something implemented which is called Taildaemon in the unicast measurements, and we'll probably use that to make multicast measurements available as well. And there should be a tool to pinpoint any problems that might occur in the multicast distribution tree. And all of this should be done inside and outside the TTM network, and there is a reason why outside is written a little bit bigger than the rest, because it sounds simple, but it turned out to be much more complicated than we thought in the beginning to make it practical. But we will come back to that in a minute. Here you can see an overview of the architecture of the whole software. The green stuff is already finished, yellow stuff currently under construction, and the red ones are to be implemented. The proposal didn't suggest this, but I found it practical, so I did it this way. We decided to split up the TTM specific measurements and the measurements that might be done outside the TTM network into two separate applications. Multicast beacon and listener for the TTM network are built on the currently existing Unicast measurement software, and another library I developed which implements functionality that is shared between the TTM specific listener and the outside the TTM network listener. And everything can be configured via a unified configuration interface, which should look similar to what is already available for the Unicast measurement. Data is generated by these two listeners and beacons, can be printed in graphs, and this data is also monitored by an alarm system, which also should trigger the yet-to-be-implemented problem pinpointer, that's what I call it. So whenever a problem arises and the alarm system detects a problem, the problem pinpointer will start and somehow track down the problem, if that is possible. Let's have a look at the TTM-specific measurements. Some of you might recognize this interface. It looks pretty much the same as it does with the Unicast measurement, but behind there, there's quite a few different things, but yeah, you will be familiar with it and might be able to use it easily. We can do very accurate delay measurements because we have the GPS clocks on each test box, and we can do fairly accurate loss measurements. Fairly accurate because for the moment we decided to step back from implementing any central comparison of the data. So we can estimate, because of the Poisson distribution, it was already mentioned, how many packets got lost, but we can't do it 100% exact. We stepped away from this because it's rather difficult to implement this and might not be of too much use, and there are other things that might be more important. Monitoring outside the TTM network is a completely different thing. We are currently implementing a custom listener, which can be configured to various kinds of different multicasting streams. You can see a picture of the user interface. We can do fairly accurate delay measurements this time because it depends on the timestamp that are in the packets that we are receiving from the outside world, if there are even any. The whole thing will be highly configurable. You can configure expected rate of packets that are coming in, a timestamp format, timestamp offset, maybe defined values that might be always the same in a header field, a packet size, and there will also be an option to automatically configure these things. There will be configurable alarms, which you can configure for different conditions and sensitivities. And at the moment, all the alarms are sent via email. They will also trigger the problem pinpointer, of course, but they are also sent via email. And we were discussing this recently, whether to implement SNMP as well. That would be a question for you if you really want that, or if it's not so important for you. Yeah. You can see a rough timeline. We've already implemented the multicast beacon and listener, and also the graphs and the user interface for the TTM-specific measurements. I'm currently working on the alarm system and the custom listener and alarm integration there. Alarm system is, at least for the TTM side, finished, but not for the custom listener, of course. And yeah, by December or end of December, beginning of January, the problem pinpointer should be ready, and then we will step by step move into production, and we hope to be able to deliver something by March. Well, as far as testing is concerned, at the moment we are doing all the testing on a separated virtual LAN, and it's only linked local, everything on one LAN. This is sufficient for developing the beacons and the listeners, developing the alarm system and the user interface. However, I don't think it would be much fun to play hide and seek when there's only one place to hide. So for the problem pinpointer, we need more. We need at least a few routers that are multicast enabled and a few boxes where we can run our beacons and listeners on. And yeah, we would need your help for this. We were thinking about defining a subset of test traffic boxes which are on multicast enabled networks and using these to develop this this problem pinpointer tool. Maybe you have any other ideas or suggestions how we could do this. Maybe some of you, I already talked to a few of you, I'm not sure if you're here, but I was saying they have multicast enabled networks, maybe we can use a machine on there and test these things. So that's pretty much it, and I hope to get some input and feedback from you if you like the direction this is going. Any suggestions would be welcome.
Questions? Carol, are you happy?
He's not here.
I was just going to say, can I speak to you afterwards about this? We've got a lot of multicast sources and so forth. We should probably understand the scope
of it. Can you please come to the microphone?
Sorry, James Rice. I was wondering if it's possible to speak to you after the working group. There's various stuff on multicast. I've got a bunch of peers and sources which it would be useful to collaborate on, I think,
yes.
Which is probably outside the scope of the open mic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I will be here all week.
Great.
So approach me when you have some ideas.
Excellent.
Feel free to come to me anytime.
Thank you. Cheers.
Any other questions? Suggestions?
No, then we move on. Next up is Dave Frans. Next up is, I believe, Renee. Yeah, Renee. Some other things we've been looking at. First result with DFC Cocker. Renee will explain what it is and why it's good.
Okay, so we're looking at a new clock for TTM. It's called TSC. But first, so why do we look into this? Well, we've had feedback from our customers that the GPS installation is not always that trivial. Use GPS for accurate timekeeping, but you need a good view of the sky to keep track of the satellites and receive the time. And for various reasons, it's not always easy to get that up, to get it done. Cabling through a large building, getting access to the roof. It's not always works out and delays the installation of the box. Some people also approach us and say, well, we already have GPS up for our time servers or another time server solution, can't we use that? And unfortunately, the answer is no. The accuracy provided by NTP is not good enough for our measurements. The TSC clock is something which is relatively new. It uses the TSC register of the CPU, which is turns out to be a very stable counter. It can be used for differential time measurements with appropriate calibration. But yeah, unfortunately, we do one-way delay where you have two hosts which need to be synchronized in time. So Daryl Fritsch and his colleagues have been looking at this. and came up with a solution to use timestamps from NTP to steer the TSC, and by combining these make a clock which keeps track of absolute time. He presented this work in the IMC conference some 2 years ago, and afterwards continued into making it in production, porting it to FreeBSD. And in recent months, the API has been finalized, and we're looking into benchmarking this in the TTM environment. Here's a first plot, plotting the difference between the TSC clock, the time from TSC, and the time from the GPS clock, both in the same box. They run in parallel. The scale is in microseconds, so you have to be aware of that. The difference is about 60 to 40 microseconds. It doesn't necessarily say which one is good or bad. It's subtracting the two of them. And even for TTM, at this level, at this position, it's not that important whether the absolute offset of time is 40 or 30 microseconds. It's much more the variation which we are worried about. So you see on a short time scale, say a couple of packets, the spread is not that large, but it starts drifting, and this is because of temperature variations which make the TSC register a drift and change its rate a little bit. So we wanted to know what this does for TTM in the real world and with our own code. We're using a test setup where we have one box with the TSC clock and the GPS clock in parallel, and we're sending packets to another TTM packets to another box which has the normal GPS solution. Here's the standard plot of seen many times of TTM plots, just measurements between the two boxes on a local network, very stable, 0.1 microsecond delay, 0.1 millisecond delay, very small spread. Yeah, there's scatter, but that's usual due to congestion and other load on the network. Now we look at TSC. We see the same scale. It's important to realize it's we're looking at the sub millisecond range here, so it's not that bad as it may seem. It's drifting due to temperature, as I said, and the spread in this is about 50 microseconds either direction, which is still good if you realize that if TTM measurements, which usually go over longer distances, which are easily 5, 10 or more milliseconds, this is like two orders of magnitude below. So, and yeah, to show how this improves on standard NTP. This is using a similar box, but now with only the NTP synchronization, no steering by TSC. And so TSC really is an improvement over the normal NTP software solution. The conclusion is the results are promising. I didn't say it specifically, but this is with a NTP server which is nearby, is one hop away, not in the same building. It's in our racks at the AMSIC, so it's a few kilometers away. Realistic solution. If you have a good Stratum 1 server in your network in your city, this could be a solution for long distance delay measurements. It's better than the standard NTP. And yeah, there's more work to be done here. We will look at how it performs when you use an NTP server which is somewhat further away, and you don't have it yourself, but you use one of the public NTP servers or NTP server from a test box. And we also look into making this production software for TTM. Right now it was really prototyping and outside the normal framework. So we can use this in places where GPS is difficult to achieve. And that's it. Questions?
No questions for an end? Well,
Rodney Tillotson, Janet Sert. What NTP things does the actual TTM box then do? Is it just an NTP server? What I was really thinking was, you talked about one stratum, one source. Mm-hmm. Should it be talking to lots of different servers, and would that help?
Well, not sure. You introduce a lot of uncertainty with NTP, and you have the delays in the network which influence your timestamps.
Okay, but you know, the idea is that if you do enough of this, the diversity, you know, gives you some statistical benefit. And I wondered if that was available to a TTM box as well.
We'd have to look into that.
Okay.
This plot, I only looked into one NTP server.
To answer Rodney's question, I mean, what happens with NTP is you may have multiple peers configured, but at the end you synchronize to one of them. So you synchronize your local clock to one other NTP speaker, and that's basically so Rene's tests are valid, because in the end you only select one, and I think for this I would expect that for this to work, you need one with a pretty constant delay. It doesn't need to be actually in the same place. It needs a constant network delay. Yeah. So in the end, what it means is, like, if you have one close by in terms of network, it's good enough. But more NTP peers don't add anything. Yeah, and but my question is more for Luca, actually. Do these routers have something like this CSC register as well? And could we do this on the small boxes as well? That would be really, really nice.
Yeah, this is something I was thinking about, because something I forgot to mention before, that we need to synchronize.
Go to a microphone, because people might be listening.
Yeah, something I forgot to mention is the following, that those boxes have an NTP client on it. And the NTP is necessary for running the test, because the router itself saves on the disk the result and the time when the result was computed. So this means that we store that time into RRD. So if your clock is not synchronized, I'm not talking about seconds, but at least, you know, tenth of seconds or hours, basically the result that we fetch from the box will be put into RRD at the wrong place. So we don't have those kind of problems. But of course, a better source for time is important, also for, I think, for measuring, for instance, jitter and other things. I'm not sure if the MIPS CPU has this kind of register. I have to check. In fact, I've written down the paper. Of course, there are some boxes that are using x86, so those should have it. So probably this could be a good choice for selecting one box or another based on this assumption.
Okay, it looks like we have to point you to the answer. Okay, thanks, Rene. So the last thing on the agenda this afternoon is the report of the TTM Future Task Force. There we go. Right. So at RIPE 52, well, slide says 53, but previous RIPE meeting, whatever the number is, a task force was formed to discuss the future of the TTM service. Shortly after the meeting, we started discussing the charter on the mailing list. We agreed on the charter. Then it was beginning of July. We decided we woke. It's time to go on a summer holiday, so we did, and we came back, got preoccupied with other things, and then sometime in August realized, hey, wait a second, we have this task force and we promised a report by this meeting. So we started discussing something, but we didn't quite finish.
And this is essentially a core dump of current ideas. So just on some background, we identified some users of the TTM data. Well, on one hand, it's the people hosting the boxes. More general, it's the community at large. We see lots of researchers and other interested people asking for copies of the data. And slightly different group is the DNSmon users. Okay, we then started to analyze the services which are currently running on the test boxes. Well, first of all, there is the group delay, loss, jitter, traceroute. At RIPE 52, it became quite clear that that people are interested in this data. So, probably whatever we do, we should keep the possibility to do those measurements if people want to see the data. And that includes all the known features like alarms, some DQM, web interface on the box, whatever. For setup, at the moment, setup is done with a homegrown mechanism that allows the NCC to configure it. Okay, this was an invention, it's about 10 years old now. In the meantime, standards have moved forward. There's now a thing called OAMP, which is a generic control mechanism to set up and do measurements between TTM boxes and similar devices. It has a couple of features. It allows any user subject to authorization to set up measurements and do measurements on demand. Like, okay, I now want to measure for half an hour between this box and give me the results. You do something and OAMP goes off, does all the authentication, sets up the session, does the measurement, gives you the data. It also is since it's protocol, it's more generic. OAMP can do measurements between boxes that implement OAMP, whether they are TTM or one of the five or six other vendors or implementers of these metrics. So one thing we're thinking about is, okay, we drop the NCC mechanism, put OAMP on the boxes, gives you these features. And then, of course, once you have OAMP, we would still define a baseline set of measurements as NCC, and of course give the user the possibility to tune this. Data collection, well, that follows this model. Of course, the NCC will collect data for the measurements that it started. It will do some processing. It will store it in a public place. One thing we notice is that at the moment we're generating hundreds of plots and lists every day, and that's something that we'll probably revise at some point. We now have tools that allow you to pull plots up on demand. Probably go a little bit more in that direction, not generate hundreds of plots that nobody ever looks at, but rather give people a web interface and a bit of CPU power and allow them to generate the plots as they want. For user measurements, well, of course, this is something set up by an individual user. Well, he asks for it, he gets the data, and any analysis, plotting, etc., has to be done by him. And it will also be up to the user whether he makes the data available. Next service on the boxes, DNSmon. Well, people are happy with it, no reason to touch it. Then, new things we want to put on the boxes. One of them is our protocol beacons, something that sends out packets for a service on a regular basis, allowing people to monitor the systems. One example we've seen is the multicast work, where there's a subset of people hosting a box interested in this. That would be one possibility. Another one, which comes more from the RIS world, would be debug on prefixes. You announce certain prefixes and you allow people to check if their filters work. This would be a potential new service on the box. Next one, also came up from various places. Something that allows people to do network experiments. So, well, I once called it a shell account, and that's probably a completely wrong word, but it's essentially a mechanism where people can get access to a set of boxes and do a one-off network experiment. and the box will offer the framework. People doing the measurements will have to do all the work, like develop the test, analyze the data, whatever. This is intended as a community service. We have even had a good example, the K-Root Anycast work discussed in the DNS working group. Use probes running on the boxes for one-off experiment, run, analyze, done. And there are similar models around Vini, Planet Lab, and well, we want to look at what these guys have done and see if we can copy or collaborate or whatever. On the new service, well, we've just seen the CBM discussion by presentation by Luca. Well, obvious thing would be for the box to act as a CBM reference point or server. Not much to say there. Another new service, or well, more line of thought, is start to combine the data with other services. I mean, there are lots and lots of measurements being done out there, both by the NCC, both by other groups. Well, there is probably benefit in trying to combine the data and also try to better integrate with other services. For example, you get an AS or you get a prefix. Well, hey, it would be cool to have all kinds of things pre-configured on these boxes or easily configurable on those boxes, so you can, when you bring it into production, you can easily start to measure things, see things about your network. Okay, so much about measurements. Next thing we looked at was the problem of ownership of the boxes. Well, for both TTM and DNSmon, it's essential that there are lots of number of active boxes at interesting locations. And these boxes measure between each other or measure something which is representative of the community. And you can only do that if you have a large enough user base. So we thought a bit further, and one idea we came up with, well, why doesn't the NCC install boxes at important locations? And important location would be a major AS, something like that. The NCC pays the box, whoever hosts it only commits to providing a bit of rack space and a bit of power, essentially gets it for free. Criteria would be essentially beauty contest, with some possible criteria listed there. We still have to look at it. And of course, this doesn't limit people to order more boxes or boxes if they are interested themselves. It just guarantees a minimum set throughout the internet as a base. Next problem, hardware. This is something that came from our operations group. At the moment, for TTM boxes, there is no write-off, which means that we still have boxes running which were built in 1997. We have, that's 10 years old hardware. It's already hard to maintain, since sometimes you get a new OS version and the drivers have been dropped, things like that. If it breaks, it's hard to debug. People say, yeah, well, why don't you put in a new disk? Well, try getting a disk for a 10-year-old PC, that's hard. And it also just gives us a very large variety of operating systems, hardware versions, whatever. So, suggestion we have is, okay, well, introduce a model to write of hardware. 3, 4 years, 5 years, something like that. And then say, well, when people join the TTM network, well, you say, you do the measurements for 3 years, and after 3 years or whatever the lifetime is, it switches off unless you buy a new machine. At the same time, well, we will have some, we'll introduce something to phase out older hardware. Another thing is, well, we've had questions, lots of questions in the past. Why do we have to get the box from the NCC? Well, at the moment, there's no real reason anymore. So one thing we can do is just allow people to build their own box. And if you, the hardware is a fairly standard PC that runs FreeBSD, well, you can get those everywhere. So that's one thing. Obviously, we want to follow up on the work on the TSC clock, so GPS free box once the technology is mature enough. Next problem, administration. For my finance departments, I get lots of complaints about collecting the service fee. And there are two basic issues there. Well, first of all, it's not always clear that TTM is a package. It's not only the hardware, it's the hardware plus the service fee. It's you buy one thing and you cannot just buy the hardware. Well, you can, but operating it is part of the thing, and there's a service fee for this. Other thing we notice is that contact people disappear. What typically happens is somebody sits at an ISP, orders the TTM service, pays the first year, the second year he pays, and then he goes on and moves somewhere else. And the third year an invoice is sent and nobody knows what it's about. So the suggestion is to do something like revise the contract and put the whole thing on the one single contract, which is hardware, service fee for a 3-year period or whatever, and all the associated costs. People pay once in advance, and there are no, what people sometimes call hidden fees, even though it's not really hidden. And this fits nicely with the model we see for supporting the hardware, since if you have the service fee for a 3-year period or whatever, well, you have this thing, it's there, it's used for 3 years. After 3 years, we send you an email. Well, it will be switched off then. If there is an interested person, he said, oh yeah, I want to renew it, fine. If the contact person has disappeared, well, we can say, well, sorry, well, you ordered it for 3 years, we switch it off since you didn't renew it. Okay, then there's some practical things. Okay, well, let's skip those. So this is a proposal. This group sees it as a 3 years plan. Do this for a couple of years, evaluate afterwards. Okay, it reduces some problems for us. I've covered this. And here's sort of how this group sees itself continue. Well, we hope to have some discussion on it. We definitely want to have more discussion both here and on the mailing list. And since these are all rough ideas, work on a more detailed proposal and implementation plan. So this group wants to continue its work. And given all the other things that are happening at RIPE NCC, we hope to have it done earlier, but and in the worst case, we want to have a proposal ready by RIPE 54 in April or May of next year. And that's it. Are there already any comments, or should this group just continue, or whatever? Neil.
Neil O'Reilly. Just a quick comment on the suggestion for a new model for the contract. I think I know of at least one organization for whom this would make it much easier to become a customer. And I know that the colleague of mine who's also in this room would be eager to see that happen, and I think we can persuade our boss.
Okay.
Ruben Stave, RIPE NCC. Quick comment about the hardware lifecycle model that currently, as it is proposed, has a conflict with getting the grid up and running, as it means that if no new installations are performed or replacements are done, the grid will just deteriorate and fade away. So if you can help us out, please do.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously one thing we haven't thought about and we should is the transition from current model to new model, and one thing we definitely don't want to do is break the current network apart and then start rebuilding it, so we have to think about this transition.
Hi, I'm Simon Leinen from Switch. I also think that a new charging model makes a lot of sense. I have some doubts about this 3-year write-off period that seems a tad aggressive to me. I think we have two of these 7-year-old boxes, and they I think we had one or two failures, but those were like in the early days, so they seem to have become more stable actually over time.
Yeah, well, the 3 years are variable. Well, I picked a 3-year because that seems to be the current standard in industry for writing over PC. I agree with you that it can probably be longer, and definitely for the GPS clock and things like that, it can be at least 5 years. I mean, with the GPS stuff, I've not seen any failures once they operate.
Yeah, it's a detail, but it's of course a trade-off, because you have like more than 100 machines probably to replace every 3 years, and that would add up to a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the work will be distributed, but some of them will be centralized, so I'm
absolutely
concerned.
Yeah. Okay. Any further comments? I think we have run 10 minutes over time, and whatever the people entering the room is not because they like my presentation, it's because the next working group is going to kick us out. So, is there anything other for the that people want to bring up for the test traffic working group? No? Then thanks all, and we'll see you on the mailing list or at the next RIPE meeting.
Can you wire up Nina for sound? Because she's chairing. Do you have another microphone? No? Okay. Well, we can go up here. I'm just trying to find the right button to push.
2, 3. Testing 1.